set up if you need to grab something. Real quick, I want to open up this morning just with a quick story. About 8 years ago, it dawned on me, about 8 years ago, we moved into the home where we live today. And my daughter was turning 2 years old that year, and her birthday's early October. We moved in about mid-September, and so we were still getting out of boxes, and my wife had this idea for her birthday that we would build this, we'd get her one of those big playhouses, a play fort type thing equipped with like a swing set and a slide and a rock climbing wall, and like the whole thing. And what you don't realize is that those things come in boxes, unassembled. So we went to pick the thing up. And by the way, she's 2 years old. She would have been good with a box full of Play-Doh, but we got a playhouse. And I show up to pick up the playhouse, and it's in two boxes about the size of the bed of my truck. And so I get home, and I back my truck up into our backyard, and I unload these boxes. We're still getting out of boxes inside the house. And I'm on the clock now for just about a week before her birthday to have this thing built. And so I would begin unloading this box. And what it was just like thousands of marked boards, a instruction manual about the size of a phone book. I know, kids, you don't know what that is, but your parents do. And like all of these random bolts and screws and things. And so for the next several days after work and after unloading things, I would go out in the backyard with whatever daylight I had left, probably 14, 15 solid hours putting this thing together. I realized, man, I bit off a whole lot more than I could chew. And at this point, by the way, our backyard was just inundated with mosquitoes. So I'm like, it feels like the Amazon outside. I'm in the backyard getting like picked up by these mosquitoes. I'm getting swarmed. I'm trying to put this thing together. And by God's grace, the thing got built. And my daughter was pumped about it, and it still stands there today. In fact, it's going to go with her to her home one day. We will never get rid of that thing. But I say this all that to say, man, there was this project I got into that I realized, man, I was all alone, and I shouldn't have been, right? It was a lot more than one person can do by themselves. Can I ask you, have you ever been there before? Have you ever had something that you're doing in life, something so big, so important, that, man, you can't afford to mess it up, right? Her birthday was coming. But it was so big and so massive that really you couldn't hardly do it by yourself. Can I tell you what we have in front of us, church? What we've been walking through for the last several weeks is this work that God's called us to that is so big and so important, not a one of us can do it by ourselves. That's what that passage reminds us. Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Unless the Lord builds it. Man, we can work all we want. We can do all we want. We can plan programs, and we can do gatherings, and we can plan events, and we can put our hands to a lot of busyness. But unless the Lord builds it through us, it won't get built. You know, this work that we're calling this church to, this work that I've asked you to pray about, this work of seeing a church built, not just a building, but a church built for the coming generations, is a work that takes all of us praying, committing, and giving. That's what we're going to talk about today in Nehemiah chapter 3 as we close out this series. And I want you to see that this passage, Nehemiah 3, is a passage we often spend a whole lot of time and effort trying to get around. We don't typically come to passages like Nehemiah 3 and get excited about reading these passages in these texts because they're obscure. They're a list. It's a list of Hebrew names. And so, parents, I want you to know I didn't have your kids stand for 6 minutes while I read these Hebrew names. Instead, I chose one verse for you. So you can thank me later. Okay. Nehemiah 3, though, I do want to read this over you. And because I believe there's a lesson in even this obscure passage. Okay. It says this to us. Then Eliashib, the high priest, rose up with his brothers, the priest, and they built the sheep gate. That's about the easiest verse in this text. They consecrated it, set its doors. They consecrated as far as the Tower of the Hundred, as far as the Tower of Hananel. And next to him, the men of Jericho built. And next to them, Zakur, the son of Imri, built. The sons of Hasaneah built the fish gate. They laid its beams and set its doors, its bolts, and its bars. And next to them, Meremoth, the son of Uriah, son of Hakas, repaired. And next to them, Meshullam, the son of Berechiah, son of Meshezabel, repaired. And next to them, Zadok, the son of Baana, repaired. And next to them, the Tekoites repaired. But their nobles would not stoop to serve the Lord. Jehoiada, the son of Pesiah, and Meshullam, the son of Besadeah, repaired the gate of Yeshanah. They laid its beams, set its doors, its bolts, and its bars. And next to them, they repaired Maladiah, the Gibeonite, and Jadon, the Maranathite, the men of Gibeon and of Mizpah, the seat of the governor of the province beyond the river. Watch this. Next to them, Uzziel, the son of Harhiah, goldsmiths repaired. Next to him, Hananiah, one of the perfumers, repaired. And they restored Jerusalem as far as the broad wall. Next to them, Rephaiah, the son of Hur, ruler of half the district of Jerusalem, repaired. And next to them, Jediah, the son of Harumaph, repaired opposite his house. And next to him, Haddish, the son of Hashabaniah, repaired. Micaiah, the son of Haram, and of Hassab, the son of Pahath Moab, repaired another section of the Tower of the Ovens. Next to him, Shalom, the son of Halahesh, ruler of half the district of Jerusalem, repaired. He and his daughters. I love that. Hanan and the inhabitants of Zenoa repaired the valley gate. They rebuilt it and set its doors, its bolts, its bars, and repaired 1,000 cubits of the wall as far as the dung gate. Micaiah, the son of Rechab, ruler of the district of Beth Hakerem, repaired the dung gate. He built it. He rebuilt it and set its doors, its bolts, and its bars. And Shalom, the son of Kol-Hozeh, ruler of the district of Mizpah, repaired the fountain gate. He rebuilt it, and he covered it, and set its doors, its bolts, and its bars. And he built the wall of the pool of Shelah, of the king's garden, as far as the stairs that go down from the city of David. After him, Nehemiah, the son of Azbuk, ruler of half the district of Beth-Zur, repaired to a point opposite the tombs of David, as far as the artificial pool, and as far as the house of the mighty men. That is a different Nehemiah, by the way. After him, the Levites repaired. Rehum, the son of Bani. Next to him, Hashabiah, ruler of the half of the district of Keilah, repaired for his district. And after him, the brothers repaired. Bavi, the son of Hinadad, the ruler of half the district of Keilah. Next to him, Ezer, the son of Jeshua, the ruler of Mizpah, repaired another section opposite the ascent of the armory at the buttress. After him, Barak, the son of Zabai, repaired another section from the buttress of the door, or to the door of the house of Eliashib, the high priest. And after him, Meremoth, the son of Uriah, son of Hakas, repaired another section from the door of his house, of the door of Eliashib, to the end of the house of Eliashib. After him, the priest, the men of the surrounding area repaired. After them, Benjamin and Hashab repaired opposite their house. After them, Azariah, the son of Messiah, son of Ananiah, repaired beside his own house. After him, Binui, the son of Hinadad, repaired another section from the house of Azariah to the buttress to the corner. Pelal, the son of Uzai, repaired opposite the buttress and the tower projecting from the upper house of the king at the court of the guard. After him, Padiah, the son of Parash, and the temple servants living on Opel, repaired to a point opposite the water gate on the east and the projecting tower. After him, the Tekoites repaired another section opposite the great projecting tower as far as the wall of Ophel. Above the horse gate, the priest repaired. Each one is opposite his own house. After them, Zadok, the son of Immer, repaired opposite his own house. After him, Shemaiah, the son of Shechaniah, the keeper of the east gate, repaired. After him, Hananiah, the son of Shelemiah, Hanan, the sixth son of Zalaf, repaired another section. After him, Meshullam, the son of Berechiah, repaired opposite his own chamber. After him, Malchijah, one of the goldsmiths, repaired as far as the house of the temple servants and of the merchants opposite the muster gate and to the upper chamber of the corner. And between the upper chamber of the corner and the sheep gate, the goldsmiths and the merchants repaired. Now, two questions are running through your head right now. I got some round of applause in the middle. Thank you for that. Two questions are running through your mind right now. You're like, Matt, this is a family service. What in the world did you read that for? Maybe you're here and you're saying another question. How in the world did he pronounce all of those Hebrew names?
Well, let me just let you in on a little secret to answer that question. Listen, you just say it with confidence and keep moving, right? You know, don't let them see your weakness. Just keep it moving.
But you're probably more importantly asking this question, what in the world does that have to do with me, Matt?
And the answer to that question is why I resolved months ago that I would end this passage, in this series, in this passage. And why all week long I listened to this passage read aloud by men who know how to pronounce these names. And why I read this passage aloud dozens of times. And why even 30 seconds before I walked in this door, I was in my office reading this passage again and again, laboring through it. Because this passage is so important for us. There's a lesson in the reading of even hard text like this. And I want to answer that question with three truths I think we find in this passage, okay? The first one is this. Every name matters because every person matters to the Lord, okay? Every name matters because people matter. The reason I labored through this text is because I believe the Lord wants to teach us a lesson about his word that we would miss without this text. Here's the lesson again. Names matter to God. Can I tell you, your name matters to God. Kids, look right at me. Where are my kids in the room? Little man, little girls, where you at? Listen, you matter to God. You matter to him. These names that I read to you, these are real people in history. They're real people. These are fathers. These were daughters. These were sons. These were friends. These were real people in a real time that had real fears. Look at me. Real failures. Real preoccupations in their lives. Dreams for themselves. Things they set out to, they wanted to do and accomplish. These are real people that are remembered forever because of the work that they did on the wall, because of the work they committed themselves and that they were a part of. Look at me. They weren't remembered for the businesses they led. Had they not done this work, I want you to understand, their names would have been forgotten in history. They weren't remembered for the resumes they claimed, the wealth they had. They weren't remembered because of how cool they were or what sports they played. They weren't remembered because they were because of the accomplishments that they could brag about. They were remembered and written down in God's holy and errant and inspired word forever because they were a part of something so much bigger than themselves. I remember a quote from a man named C.T. Studd that is just an anchor quote for your heart and life. He says this. He says, only one life will soon be passed, but only what's done for Christ will last. Only one life. We all have one life. And the reality of that quote, the scripture reminds us of, it tells us that our lives are a vapor, our lives are a mist. We're here for a moment and then we're gone. Our lives will fold up much quicker than we want to admit. And only the only thing that will ultimately matter in the end is what we did for the Lord. How we spent our life poured out for his kingdom and his glory. This list that I just read to you, these names, reminds us that this is true. That we only have a single life. And the only thing that is actually eternal about it, our souls are eternal, but the only thing that will be remembered by our life this side of heaven is what we did for God's kingdom with it. Because listen, people matter to the Lord. They matter. And not just you in this room that have received Christ, but there are people out there that we do life with, that we work with, that we see at the ball field. There are people that God has before time set his affection on. Their names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Look at me. And they don't know it yet. And it pleases God. It pleases God to use people like us, real people with real names and real stories, who become convinced by the work of the Spirit of God in us and the instruction of the scriptures in our lives to lay down our dreams and to live into God's desire in his kingdom.
right, to tell them that there is a way for them to be reconciled to God. There is a way for sinners to be made right with God. And it is through the preaching of the gospel by which they come to know him. Listen, they matter. They matter to the Lord. And it is God's will to use, this passage reminds us, it is God's will to use real people to accomplish that will. He could do it without us. He could breathe out a solar system and hang every star in the sky. He could tell the ocean where to stop. He keeps your heart beating in your chest. Can I tell you this? He doesn't need you. He doesn't need any of us today. But God chooses to get glory through us. That's the mystery of his will. Why use broken people? Why use people that would rather build their own kingdoms? Why use people that would rather see their own names elevated, their own names exalted, their own names in lights? Because it gives God more glory. When we open our eyes to the beauty of Jesus and say, I'm going to sell out for that. I'm going to live in to that. First observation from this text I want you to see is that the Lord uses people to accomplish his will in the world. And since he uses people to accomplish his will in the world, that passage reminds us, watch this, that we all have a place in it. Every one of us. When you read this list, you don't see construction crews and civil developers and engineers listed. That's not what the list tells us. What you see in this is perfumers and priests, daughters and goldsmiths on the wall working to see this great vision that God put in Nehemiah come to fruition. Can I tell you, listen, this isn't about qualified construction crews. This is about a cupbearer with conviction to see God's glory done in the earth. Can I tell you, that reminds us that every one of us have a place in God's work today. Every one of us do. Teachers, lawyers, business owners, stay-at-home mamas and CFOs, pilots, business leaders, elected officials, we all have a part to play. So, man, God uses people to accomplish his will, and because he uses people, we all have a place. And since we all have a place, listen to me, it doesn't matter about your past. Like some of you are sitting here right here, and you're like, Matt, yeah, that's good for the person across the road, but you don't know my baggage. You don't know that thing I did. You don't know that thing in my past. You don't know. And you think maybe there's something that you've done that has sidelined you from the work God's called you to. There's something you've done that has disqualified you. There's something you've done that's made you unusable to God. Let me breathe some life into you this morning. When you read this list, you come across the name. If you look at Ezra chapter 10, verse 15, this is the book that happens just before Nehemiah. If you don't know this, the Jews went back into Jerusalem, began rebuilding their civilization in three waves. One led by a man named Zerubbabel, the other by a priest named Ezra. Ezra began to rebuild the temple, and he encountered incredible opposition as he did so. In chapter 10, you meet a man named Meshulam. Look at verse 15. It says, only Jonathan, the son of Asahel, and Josiah, the son of Tikva, opposed this. And watch this. And Meshulam, you see it? And Shabbatai, the Levite, supported them as they opposed the work. Now check this out. When you look at Nehemiah chapter 3, verse 4, notice the name that appears. And next to them, Meremoth, the son of Uriah, son of Hakas, repaired. And next to them, Meshulam, the son of Berechiah, son of Meshezabel, repaired. Now, I want to say something because many scholars debate this. Is this the same Meshulam of Ezra chapter 10? Meshulam was a very common name, like Matthew, like Matt. It was a common name in that day, right? So is this the same one? There's debate about that. But it doesn't really matter. What you see the potential of in this text, that there was a man who was once a rebel who is now rebuilding the wall. There was once a man who once opposed God's work, who now his heart has been changed, and he's a great ambassador for the work. He's living into what God has called him to, right? And whether this is the same Meshulam, it doesn't matter, because here's the point. That's the work of the gospel, isn't it? Isn't that what God always does? We oppose God's work. God redeems us. He works in us so that we can work for him. All right, that's what you see in this story. Is a picture of what's possible when any sinner looks to Christ, bows their knee under his lordship, and gets to work for his glory. All right, listen, God works through people. He works through people to see his will done in the world. We all have a place, no matter our past. So the first thing you need to see in this text is that people matter to the Lord. Stories matter to the Lord. Souls matter to the Lord, which leads to my second point, and it's this: people matter, watch this, so our work matters. People matter to the Lord, so our work matters to the Lord. Hey, listen, I could preach this passage to you right now, and maybe you would hear something that would stick with you. But I want to tell you, I needed some help with this. So our team sat down with some of our oldest charter members of this church and recorded a powerful video I want you to watch, because I think it'll say much louder what I would intend to say to you. Now watch this. That's good.
My name's Bruce Kreider. This is my wife, Cammie. And we've been married 37 years.
Yep. We have these very dear friends, Frank and Frances Ingram. They own what we call Taproot Farms. It's out on Clovercroft. And my mama died when I was 28. And Frances just became my second mom. The door was always open. It didn't matter who you were. Watch them, how they supported the church, not just with their finances, but with their whole body and soul. Serving any way they could. And they had a son, Hal, that we never met. He had died when he was 18. So one day, this was just a few months before he died, he was out in the garden with his daddy. They were working in the garden. And Hal looked over to the corner of the property where our church is gonna be. He said, "Daddy, I'm gonna build a church there one day." And when she told me that, I just started crying. I said, that is just so special.
But as we begin to talk to Frank and Frances about buying 7.5 acres for a building, that I said, I think if we talk to Frank and Frances and give them our vision, they'd sell us some land. And I said, "Frank, you insist that we gotta have 30 acres. How could you help us do that? You old gray-haired silver fox." That's exactly what he said. "I'll tell you what. All right, here's what I can do. You got my house, and I think it was 18 acres, 15 acres, is not in the trust. And I can just give that to you." At that point, I left the house and driving down the driveway, and just stopped. And I said, "God, what just happened? What just happened? I mean, this land's worth at that time, you know, about $100,000 an acre. We had no idea how this was going to develop, and that someday that Taproot Farm on Clovercroft Road, where our church is going to be built, is going to come as a major gift from them to us so that we could, in fact, build a church there. I see the church building as a tool, and it will have a great testimony in the community. It's going to have such an impact on that part of the county. It really is going to be significant. God's really working." Tammy and I, we've given to the building program, we give regularly to the ministry, because we see God working there, and we're hearing God's word being preached, and we want to be a part of that.
I think Bruce and I, of course, we're in our senior years and the oldest people in the church. So this isn't for us. But to be able to say, we have invested in children and young adults and older adults who are committed to the Lord.
It's just
exciting for us.
Really exciting.
To see the young families and to see the growth. I'm planning on being here a long time. I'm looking forward to a lot of things. Y'all might have to wheel me in, but I want to be there for all of it.
Where you see God working,
jump in.
Get involved in it. Where you see Him working.
We thank the Lord for them, man. What a testimony.
Listen, our work matters. Our work matters because it's not about a building, right? It's not about a building. It's never been about a building. It's about a vision of something greater than any one of us. It's a vision that started way before us, of people that we've never met who are actually buried nearby where our church will be built, up on the hill behind us. And if they could see today what we're going to see, if they could be around to see what we're going to step into, a vision that happened way before us, and a vision, listen to me, that's going to last way after any of us by God's grace. Because listen, the work on the building, that will fade, right? That'll fade. Churches have lifespans. I don't know if you know this yet. There's an anchor church in Alabama who is selling its property. It used to be the largest church in the SBC in Alabama that now is liquidating their assets and selling their property. This happened over the weekend. Churches have lifespans. All we can control is being faithful with what's right in front of us today. Because what we build on that building, like there may be a day where it can't house our church anymore by God's grace. We outgrow it. We have to knock the thing down and build something else. Right, well, the work on the building is not what's important. That's not what actually matters. The work that matters is the work that happens in the building. Right, it's the work of discipling. It's the work of preaching the gospel. It's the work of filling the minds and hearts of the next generation, coming generations with the glory of God. Right? It's the work of seeing marriages restored. And it's the work of baptizing. It's the work of taking communion and being edified together in Christ. Right? That's the work that matters. That's the work that lasts. And it's the work that we've been called to, called into. So Nehemiah saw a problem, and we see our problem. He saw ruins. We understand there's ruins in our own hearts, in our own lives, in our own city. And we've prayed about it. Right? We fasted together corporately. Man, we sought the Lord together, and so did Nehemiah. But he didn't end there. He worked. He worked. He got busy building. And this picture we see in this passage is a picture of a church family building side by side by side for the sake of something greater than themselves. You see, when they built that wall, I want you to understand something. They built it in faith, believing that God would use their work for something greater. And can I tell you, God did. It was inside the walls of Jerusalem where Jesus would grow. It's inside the walls of Jerusalem where Jesus would teach, where he would heal, where he would give sight to the blind, where he would raise the dead. It's inside the walls of Jerusalem where Jesus would confront the Pharisees, where he would cleanse the temple, where he would be betrayed, where he would be beaten, where he would be mocked, and outside the walls of the city, where he would die on a cross for those who place faith in him so that we could find life. So they didn't know it, but as they built that wall, following the plan that God put in Nehemiah's heart, they were actually following something that was prepared for them much further before Nehemiah, in the mind and heart of God before time. You see, there's a line, I don't know if you wouldn't necessarily grab this unless you studied it, but it's a beautiful reminder to us that God is always doing more. He's doing something greater than any of us in this room can see right now. And any of the work that we commit ourselves to for his glory, we have to trust that God is doing something for his glory and our good. He's working all things together. Listen, in the very first verse of Nehemiah 3, it says that then Eliashib, the high priest, rose up with his brothers, the priests, and they built the sheep gate. Now, I want you to see there's a map. Do we have that map? Can you throw up there real quick? There's a something really important about the sheep gate. It's at the northernmost part of this version of Jerusalem. If you see it up there, it says something interesting in the passage. It says they consecrated it. They consecrated. They didn't consecrate any more of the wall. This is the only place where they consecrate. Consecrate means to set it apart for the Lord, to call it holy, to see it as something from God for God, right? That's the work that we're doing. We're consecrating this work. This ain't about us. It's never been about us. This is for the Lord, right? Well, on every other gate and every other section of the wall, you see a familiar phrase play out. They set its beams, its bolts, and its bars. Bolts and bars are door locks, right? They're to keep something out. But the sheep gate didn't have that. The sheep gate was this gate that was always accessible, where they would bring in the sacrifices to cover the sins of God's people, right? But here's, watch this. This is what's amazing. They followed the plan of God to build the sheep gate, to consecrate it, and to leave it without bolts and bars, because one day Jesus Christ would walk through that very gate on Palm Sunday, the ultimate sacrifice, would go to the cross and lay down his life so that he would extend an everlasting welcome to God's people. You see, this wall wasn't about keeping people out. In God's mind, this wall was always about bringing a people in, into God's family, into redemption, into salvation. And so listen to me, the work that we're doing matters. It matters, church. This is what this work's always been about. It's about the gospel. It's about Jesus. It's about seeing sinners saved. And I want to remind you of that, because this last point is where I want to land it. Because the work matters, we have to give. We have to give. I love this quote from Jim Elliot. Jim Elliot was a famous missionary who wrote these words in his journal just shortly before he lost his life trying to see a people encounter Christ in a remote island of Ecuador. He said, "He is no fool," I want you to hear this, "who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose." We are not a room for fools. This is not a room full of fools today who give our life, who give our time, who give our weekends, who give our midweek, who give our money, who give our tithes, who give above and beyond to gain something that we cannot lose. We're people who believe that God's glory is at stake, Jesus Christ is at stake, and this work ultimately matters. And so here's what I want to do. Our band's going to come, and in the next few moments, we're going to respond to this work. I've asked you for a few weeks to have this card with you and to be praying about this, okay? For you to spend some time praying about what is the big prayer you're asking God to do in your life, through your life, for this church, in our community, for God's glory. And maybe you've spent some time doing that. We've prayed, we fasted together as a body. You spent 3 days seeking the Lord in prayer with your spouse, with your homes, over your kids. We came together, we worshiped in this room and prayed together as a community for what the Lord would have us to do. I ask you to commit last week. Commit to a group, man, to commit to serving. Commit to being faithful in the areas that God was leading you. And I told you that this week I was going to ask you to give. And some of you have already given. You're already giving faithfully to the Lord. You're already tithing. You're already practicing regular financial stewardship, acknowledging that everything God has given you, you've given to him, right? You're giving faithfully. But maybe God's put it in your heart over these last few weeks to give above and beyond, to see that vision become a reality. And so what I want to do, we invited your families in here because I believe this is a family matter. On that wall, what you see is not ministers doing the work, not the hired guns, you know, building the wall. It wasn't a construction crew. This was a congregation of families. And so what I want to ask you to do is spend some time in prayer as a family. If you need to move the chairs and circle up as a family around this room and to pray and to say, God, what is it you're leading us to do? What is your leading us to do? And if you want to write that on this card, you fold it in half, okay? You can put that in the box. And can I just tell you, this is symbolic. because your names aren't even on this. And it, you can write whatever you want on this card and put it in there and leave here and have no intention to do anything with it. But what I'm asking you to do is to commit to what you write. Man, you can, before you leave here, you can go to lifept.org/unless. You can sign up to give today. You can put your yes on the table today. You can sign up for a group. You can say, look, we've been sitting the sidelines and we've been doing life alone, but we're not going to do that anymore. You can go online and sign up to commit to this body as a member, to take a step. Go to First Step class. It's coming up in a couple weeks. All right? Whatever the Lord puts in your heart, this is all I want you to hear. I don't care. It's between you and the Lord. But what has the Lord put in your heart to do? And you be faithful to do it. You'll spend some time as a family. You'll come up here. Hey, Jake, can y'all light these up? You'll come up here and you'll put this in the box. Okay? The little box. Just fold it, put it in half. And then what you're going to see on these boards, hundreds of pictures that tell the story of what God's been writing in this church. Over 12 years ago when Redemption City Church was planted. 5 years ago when Life Point Arrington would eventually become Life Point College Grove, which would eventually be led to join with this body. We didn't write this story. We had no idea this would happen. But can I tell you, God wasn't surprised. He's been writing a story well beyond us. And he's going to use members of this church, families in this church, to continue that story. And so what you'll do is you'll drop your names here. And as a family, I would love for your families to sign these blank boxes, putting your name into the story God's writing of this church. And we're going to hang these in our new building. And so I want to pray over you. And I'm going to tell you this. That passage says something interesting. The very first verse says the high priest, Eliashib, he built the sheep gate. The pastor of the church led out. And I want to tell you today, my family's going to lead out in this, okay? I'm not asking you to do anything that we're not going to do. And so we're going to pray as a family, and then we're going to go to the wall. And as soon as we get done, when the Lord leads you, you guys be faithful and just come. Okay? We pray over you. Father, I love you. Dear God, thank you for your grace. Thank you for Christ. Thank you that you've given us a work that's worth doing, God. A work that will last well beyond us, Father. If we live our lives for our own glory, God, there will be a day that it will all just rust and rot and ruin, Father. But God, this thing that you've called us to, the money that will be given, the time that will be stewarded in service of your people, God, the groups and the growth that will happen in those places of community, Father, it won't be for nothing. You will see to it, Father, that it accomplishes your will. And so, God, I pray that we would hear those words echoing over our lives. He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. God, would you help us have a vision bigger than ourselves to live our lives for the sake of Christ? We just want to see his name lifted up over our own in this generation and the generations to come. In Christ's name.